Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good evening and welcome. Welcome to Target Prosperity 2016. I'm your host, Leslie Draper, and I'm really glad that you are here. I know that last week we had to cancel our classes pretty much the last minute because I wasn't feeling well, and I apologize for that, and I'm really glad that you're here and that we are back on track, back on target, as we say in this prosperity-based world. I know that, and actually I'm going to go ahead and post a link really quickly on my main Facebook page because I know that the group has been pretty slow this week, and I want to make sure that everybody knows that we are now live and streaming. So give me just a second to do that. Okay, so that just went out. I know most of you will listen to this later via the podcast, so which is fine. So let's go ahead and talk about the programming homework that you had to look at. Programming is a very, very important part of breaking down the thoughts and the thought structures within yourself to create new ones to align with prosperity. The programming is critically important, and it is something that we need to actually spend time on. It's not something that we want to just rush through. It's not something to, you know, only go in halfway. Programming is critically important, and we owe it to ourselves and to our, you know, future life of prosperity to actually take a really hard look at this. So, okay, the last time we had class, you were asked to do your brain dump on money, okay? And the brain dump on money was to look at every thought that you've had for this entire lifetime as to thoughts about money. And so if you did this fully, then what you did is you sat down and you wrote for a really long time, or maybe used your smartphone to record your thoughts as you blurted them out, you know, you verbally vomited them out, and then you went through and wrote them down. Now, after several, after several minutes of doing the brain dump, what you end up getting to is a place where you see some core beliefs, okay? Now, core beliefs are very much like the roots of a tree. They're the foundation, they're really, really deep, and everything else grows off of them. And so your core beliefs are the ones that we really want to look at changing, because the beliefs that are just the branches and the leaves, well, you know, there's going to be a whole lot of them. So we don't want to sit there and try to change every single branch or every single leaf of the tree if we could just change the root. And that's what the core belief is. So an example of that might be, let's say that one of your core beliefs is that money changes people. So how would that translate to, you know, the branch or the leaf? And that would be something like you were thinking of individual people. You know, you're thinking of individual people where, well, you know, Bob inherited a lot of money and it sure changed him. And, you know, he stopped caring about people, or Joe inherited the family business and, you know, with its millions. And when he did, he lost all the parts of himself that used to be really good and care about people. He became just as money hungry as his family. Or maybe Sue over here, when her husband died, you know, at first she was devastated until she got the life insurance, and then she was just all about the money all the time. So these are, you know, beliefs that we look at. Examples of people, yes, if a thought of a person with money comes up, then we want to keep tracing it back to see what the root is. When I did my brain dump, I'll read a few of them, and then when you go back, post a few. We'll put a thread in the discussion forum on Facebook, and you can go in and put some of your brain dump beliefs on there as well. Now, keep in mind, I will tell you, this feels a little raw, even where I am. It feels a little like I'm exposing myself here and exposing, you know, my secrets, because that's what it is. These are my secrets. So it's okay if you feel that way. And because I believe in the process, I'm going to share mine with you. Okay? So when I did my bunny, I love it, my bunny. When I did my brain dump, clearly there's a rabbit in there somewhere, okay? So money is the root of all evil was the very first one I did. Money is evil, okay? And then we had some more of the Christian context coming up. It's easier for a camel to enter through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. Then I went, so I did my religious ones first, and then, and you know, there's, those expand, so clearly this is an abbreviated list. And then the next one I went into was some family beliefs from early childhood. And I remember my grandmother, and not Lucy, so those of you that know Lucy was not really a part of my life until I hit adulthood, until I hit about, you know, 20. Before that, we lived, you know, really far apart. So the grandmother I'm talking about was my grandmother, Carter, on my dad's side. And so all of these money beliefs come from her because she raised me a lot as a young child. So my Pentecostal beliefs, my money beliefs, my beliefs on sin all came from her and the church that we went to as a family. So I can remember her telling me all the time, well, we just live on $800 a month. And that's all we live on, and we have to make it work. She worked for the state at a juvenile detention center. She worked the gate. And so I can remember being really young and thinking, oh, $800 was a lot of money, but then she would, you know, tell me, it's not a lot of money. We spend about $400 a month just on food. And so then all of a sudden, $800 a month didn't seem like so much to the young child that I was. I remember one time, we had lost a library book, and it was a Wizard of Oz library book. And I don't know where or how it got lost. I'd never lost one before. But I was so worried because we were going to have to pay for it, and the book was like $6. And I went to school just crying, telling my teacher that we lived on $800 a month and we just could not afford that book. And could I give up my lunches or something to pay for it? Because I didn't want my grandma to have to pay for it. And so a lot of my money beliefs come from that upbringing. And, you know, we live on just $800 a month. The other thing that my grandma did a lot was she really made country, rural, Christian people into saints and city people into sinners. And so those are city folk. You know, city folk are the ones who have the money, not us out here in the country. You know, we live off the land out here. You know, we live according to God out here. City folk and all the stuff that they wanted. And so city folk became a big part of this paradigm as well. Country versus city, godly versus, sinners maybe is the right word to say for that. So there was a huge separation there as well. And so those beliefs that came from my paternal grandmother and the years I spent there were tied into rural, being rural, okay? They were tied into being poor and being Christian. Those three things. Now, it wasn't until much later in my life that I realized that my grandparents were actually very wealthy. They had, in addition to owning about 150-acre farm and having, you know, at one point I think they had about 350 head of cattle and, you know, multiple barns and tractors and everything. They also had oil wells producing. And I did not realize that because they still lived as impoverished people. You know, they still identified as very poor, even if they weren't. And I'll never forget one time my grandfather's brother had got a payment on one of the oil wells, and he went and paid cash from one monthly payment on a Cadillac. And my grandparents were just horrified because he was becoming cityfied. That was our word, cityfied. He was becoming cityfied with this new Cadillac. But there was enough money there to go pay cash for a new Cadillac, and that was a monthly payment. So clearly my grandparents were not the impoverished rural people that they identified as. They did not, you know, and then as other pieces of the puzzle came in, I realized that, you know, yes, they drove older cars, but then when they did go buy a new one, they would pay cash for it. And, you know, they had money, but they lived like they didn't. The issue was being a young child and being in that, I thought we were poor. You know, I worried about things all the time about how we were going to have food and how we were going to, you know, pay for things. So then when my dad died and I went to live with my mom also identified as someone with not a lot of money. And so I'm going to beep out the curse words in this, but these were beliefs from my mom. And she would say all the time, I can't blanking afford that. You know, we can't blanking afford that. It's the F word, if you want to know what's in there. But, and she would always say, we're hurting for money. We're hurting for money. I can remember one time we were cleaning coffee tables in our house. And she came in with newspapers and said, you can't use paper towels anymore to clean the glass tables because we can't afford it. You have to use these newspapers. And the newspapers got ink all over your hands and it was so gross. But I remember thinking, oh my gosh, if we can't afford paper towels, how poor are we? And so things that adults say, you know, children, especially very impressionable children, believe them wholeheartedly and don't ever think about, well, no, you know, mom tans and tones every day and there's a whole closet full of clothes. There's money here. It's just she's choosing to you know, use newspapers instead of paper towels. And so it's a choice. It doesn't mean that we were impoverished. But I can remember when Guess jeans came out, and everybody at my school was wearing Guess jeans, and I came home and asked my mom if I could have a pair of Guess jeans, and they were about $45 at the time. And, I mean, she just blew up on me. She goes, I don't know how they effing afford it. I don't know how they can effing afford to buy their kids those Guess jeans. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. You know, and she made me feel very bad. I felt very badly for being so selfish as wanting something that my mother could not give me. Okay. And this, believe me, this is not a criticism on my mom. It's just I'm giving examples of the construct that I grew up in. Okay. So we're simple country people. I don't know how they effing afford that, man. I can't effing afford that. We can't effing afford that. I don't know how they effing afford that. Rich people are going to hell. You know, rich people are not godly. Poor people are godly. Christians are poor. Christians have their wealth in heaven, not here on earth. And so these were all of the things that were in my construct. These were all the beliefs that were in there. So I then got to my adult belief. Okay, and part of that was if you have nothing, nobody can take anything from you. And that one was from being sick with MS for so long, not having health insurance, and, you know, having all these medical bills and getting collection calls and everything. You know, I could honestly tell them I had nothing to pay because I didn't, and they couldn't sue me because there was no income. So, you can't take anything from me if I don't have anything. So that's another one that came about in adulthood. Then we'll never get ahead. We're drowning. If it weren't for bad luck, I have no luck at all. And then one of the other ones from early adulthood is you must be dishonest to have a lot of money. Okay, so these are the core beliefs from my brain dump, okay? And so if you are, you know, live in the chat room or in the Facebook room, if you want to post some of your beliefs, I will help you write the corrective statements for them. But we're going to write corrective statements for the ones that I just gave as an example. Okay, so let's look at money is the root of all evil, or money is evil. This is a big one for so many people. Okay. We have all these beliefs tied into money having consequences, or money changing people, or money being evil, when again, money is not. Money is actually neutral. It's the same thing as your car. You can take your car and you can go to work, you can take your kids to the doctor, you can take you to the doctor, you can deliver Meals on Wheels, you can do a whole lot of good with that car. Or you can go mow down a whole group of people and you know, hurt people with your car. And the truth is the car has no liability either way. It is not a living being with the capability of making decisions. It is merely a tool to be used by a living being. Okay? And so by putting money in the correct context, we can neutralize some of the money, some of the energy around money is evil. okay? Because your car isn't really evil, right? Even if somebody gets really intoxicated and has an accident and kills somebody, is it the car's fault? No, of course not. It's the driver's fault, right? But that's what we're doing to money, okay? Money is just a tool. So probably the best way to break this one down would be to not to try to make money positive or good, but to break this one down, you just make it neutral. You know, money has no value except what I give to it. Money has no value except what I give to it. Money is a tool for me to use in exchange for things in my life. Money is a tool I use to exchange for things in my life. Money is just a tool. It is neither positive nor negative. It is neither good nor bad. It is just a means of exchange, and it is a tool that I assign value to. I assign value to. And that's important because especially if you are that you have a lot of issues around money and you're worried about it, you know, having or bringing evil into your life, then this is the best way to do it is make it neutral and make it just a tool, okay? Money is completely neutral. It has no value other than what I give it. Money is just an exchange of energy. It's an exchange of service. Okay? And the only value it has is what I give it. Period. That's it. The only value money has is what you give it. Okay, so now we've spent a lot of time already in this course breaking down some of the Christian beliefs that we have, but I feel like we would be, you know, doing a disservice if we just skipped over it and didn't go through it at least some today. So looking at the scriptures for it's easier for the camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. Part of your homework 2 weeks ago was to go back and look at scripture and identify scriptures that specifically spoke of prosperity, that specifically spoke of having wealth and so forth. Hey, Emily, could you do me a favor? Is my purple Bible, see that Christian mystic book? It's right underneath there. Thank you, ma'am. Let's see if I can still find this relatively quickly. There was a very specific scripture I was looking at the other day, and it was one where I might have it marked here. Oh no, that's a different one. That's really important. But there's one where it's Christ is speaking, and he's saying, you know, don't worry about what you will eat. Don't worry about where you will live, because you know the birds are always fed, and aren't you more important than the birds? And so that one is one that is really good, and if I can find it, I will. But it's one of the examples of Christ saying that, of course, you know, you will be provided for because you matter. And if I can't find it relatively quickly here, then what I will do is I will find it and post it in the then I will post it in the group later, okay? And there's a lot. I look at Matthew chapter 7, and there's a lot that talks about ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and it will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be open. And I think that for me, how I see this one energetically is that, yes, the moment you say an affirmation, oh, thank you, Catherine. I knew I was getting close. 626, and it's on the same page I'm on. Yep, I was so close. Thank you for that. So the things that's like an affirmation, the moment you say the affirmation, that thing manifests somewhere in the universe. And then every time that you hold alignment, you bring it closer and closer and closer to you every single time. Okay, and so I do believe you ask and it is given, but there's a difference between asking it is given and asking and then receiving it, okay? You have to be open to receiving it. It's not enough to just throw the affirmation out there. You have to be in alignment with it to receive it. Sometimes the angels show me this. It's like a storage house or a storage room, and every time you say an affirmation, you know, like, oh, I love my new shoes, those shoes instantaneously appear in that storage room. then everything on the physical plane between, you know, here and those shoes happens. And with every single act, with every prosperous word, with every moment of alignment, you get closer and closer and closer to those shoes. Okay? And then, yes, so it's Matthew 6:26, which is like literally going into the page that I was just on. Look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Which one of you by worrying can add one cubit to his stature? So why worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field and how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Now if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For after all these things the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all of these things. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Okay? That's what the kingdom of God is, that alignment we're discussing. Seeking the alignment to bring these things in. Seeking the consciousness to bring these things in. That is the kingdom of God. So there are so many more scriptures that prove that God wants us to be prosperous. He wants us to have clothing and have food and have drink. And so, you know, we are misinterpreting the camel scripture. But, you know, even if we could say, well, that was its intent, there's far more evidence that we are meant to be prosperous. Therefore, we have to take a really good look at why would churches teach poverty as a virtue? Why are there vows of suffering? Why are there vows of doing without? What do you think that is? Well, one of the reasons why is, that's right, more money for the church. Catherine wrote it in the chat room, more money for the establishment. That's right. That tells the people to go without for the benefit of the higher ups in the establishment, whether that higher up is church or that higher up is state. Both systems teach you that, oh, you don't have to worry about having money here. You don't have to worry about having nice things here. You'll get your reward in heaven, you know. So you just keep sacrificing and you know, just doing with very little so that you can get your big mansion in heaven. Very much, Catherine wrote, control of the populations. Absolutely. That's it. It's to keep us under control. Because if we all knew that we were entitled to food, to drink, and to clothing, to shelter, to healing, to medicine, then, you know, everybody would have to receive that. There would have to be enough for everyone. And so, you know, that's why the establishment, I'm just going to use that as the word, has manipulated religion to teach us that poverty is godly, when in fact it's the exact opposite. You know, prosperity is godly. Abundance is godly. And so all of that, you know, is coming in. So those with the money have power over those that don't. Absolutely. You know, Catherine, absolutely. And the problem is that so many generations have been taught, generation after generation after generation, that this is just the way it is. And it's the way it is. You shouldn't question it. You shouldn't want anything different. And that's just too bad for you, right? When in fact, it's not one of the things that the angels regularly show me. And I don't know why they show me, because it's not like I can individually do anything about it, but maybe they're planting seeds for the future. You never know. But one of the things they regularly show me is how preposterous it is that humans believe that they can own land, sky, or water. You can't. It's collective to every human on this planet. And I know that we, you know, own homes and stuff. And really even that, they say that you cannot own a piece of this planet. It is not possible. It's always changing and growing. And it is owned by no one. And that no one has rights to the water, or the sky or the land. And the way that they showed me that too was they showed me the sun, and they said, well, you know, a human will come along before too long and claim to own the sun and try to find a way to take ownership of the sun and then distribute it out for profits in some way. And I was like, well, that's just ridiculous. That can't be done. And then they said they did it with water. Like, oh, that's right, because the CEO of Nestle recently said that there's no inherent right to water on this planet, which is absolutely preposterous.
Oh, it's ludicrous.
It's ludicrous. It absolutely is. So, but this is, again, this is the construct. This is the construct we're in. And with the construct, you know, if we're part of it, then we're always going to suffer because we're not the top people. You know, but if we can shed the construct and create a new set of beliefs for ourselves, new programming for ourselves, that we exist independently. We see people doing this all the time. They wake up. That's literally it. We're brainwashed. We're programmed. And we're so programmed to just struggle, struggle, struggle one day to the next. You know, work, home, sleep, but there's no time or energy for anything else. And then we have medications that make us easier to be brainwashed. We have TV shows that make us easier to be brainwashed. And we're not waking up, you know. And Catherine wrote, they've done it with wind power. Yes. And, you know, one of the things, a court case I recently was reading about said that there was an organic farmer and a GMO farmer, and they were a pretty good distance apart. But the wind and the bees, you know, when they did their thing with, you know, pollination, They accidentally brought some of the new GMO super seeds into the organic farmer. Now, you realize this destroys his crop, right? Because he's an organic farmer. He doesn't want the GMO stuff on his farm. But the GMO farm actually sued him and won because he now was growing their seeds on his farm, even though it completely destroyed his organic crop. They won, which was crazy. So, okay. So back to our programming. It is a construct. Remind yourself of that all the time. This is programming. It's made. It's not inherent like they would have us believe. It is a construct. It is made. And so we're making a new one. Okay, so that's for the religious one. Now let's look at the idea of, I can't afford that. I don't know how they afford that. I just can't afford that man. Okay, so for this one, this one of the core statements is probably pretty straightforward because it would be something along, I can easily afford anything I want. That one's really pretty easy to correct. I can easily afford anything I want. Let me write that one down. And notice that I did use the word want instead of need, okay? And that is by design. That is not by accident, okay? Because I don't want to get hung up on just need, okay? I want to be able to if there's something I desire for the sake of desiring, great, I can't afford it. Now, the power in here is with I can. It doesn't mean I have to buy it every time, but it means I know that I can. And I know I can afford it easily. So it's not like, well, if I scrape every penny together, then I'll be able to afford it. No, it's I can easily afford it, and I'm making a decision then on whether or not this thing means enough to me to have. I can easily afford anything that I want. That one is pretty easy. Now, if you have the city folk versus rural folks in yours, you know, let me know and we'll write some out for that. I bet most people don't have that one. Or it could even be thinking of city to rural, you know, country people are godly, city folks aren't. Then what about maybe states, you know, like the North and the South? I guess there could be some old beliefs there. You know, we're in the South and, you know, the Yankees are always taking our money or vice versa. Okay, so look at the one about money changes people. This one is a big one, okay? And this core belief actually manifests in almost unlimited ways because all of us know somebody who has been changed by the amount of money in their pocket, whether it's for the positive or the negative. and whether it's because they now have more money or they have less money. We all know somebody that has changed in that regard. So when it comes to money changes people, and here's the flip side of that too. Aren't you wanting to change your life right now? Of course we are. That's why we're here, right? So if money changes you, is that then a bad thing? No, it doesn't have to be, because that's the whole point, to change your life. Now, does it change the core of who you are as a person? You know, probably not, but it certainly will change a lot of things. For example, here's an example of how money changes you as a person. When money is very tight, okay, and there's not enough to go around, people who want to be generous can't be, okay, or at least they can't be on the level to which they desire. And so if you had lots of money, you would probably do all kinds of random acts of kindness. But because you don't have lots of money, you know, you can't do it. So in that instance, would money changing you be a bad thing? Of course not. Of course not, because you make the world a better place through random acts of kindness. So if you had an extra, you know, $5,000 a month to work with, and you would then say, okay, so every single, at least $200 a week is going to go out into the universe to do good, that changes not just your life, but the lives of a lot of people. So in that instance, manifesting more money definitely changes you. It changes you to be a kind of like a neighborhood philanthropist, you know, out there doing good and out there giving things away. So we definitely want to be open to the positive kind of changes that we desire. So what we want to do is make sure that we restructure this core belief in a way that focuses on the positive changes. Okay, so what does that look like? Let me think about this for a minute, because you're probably going to have to replace it with a couple of core beliefs. I don't know that this is going to be one of those really simple ones that you just kind of float through, but you could say, my core beliefs of who I am remain solid regardless of how much money I have, okay? And then you could say, money has changed my life in the most amazing and positive ways. And then off those core beliefs could be everything from I generously give to others, I have enough that I can share, I love surprising other people with generous gifts of money. And so off those two core beliefs, you could really have a pretty significant, you know, shift off your tree branches and your leaves. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold just for a quick second, and I'm going to take a really big drink of water because I need to take my headset off, okay? So I'm sorry, but just bear with me just for a sec. Okay, I apologize. All of a sudden, like, my throat and everything's itching, so I'm going to take an allergy pill real quickly, and I'm going to drink some pineapple juice, which, by the way, if you did not know, pineapple juice, and do buy, if you do this home remedy, buy the organic and the good stuff. Don't buy the cheap stuff. I could not find the organic today. It's not GMO, but I couldn't find the organic stuff, and it doesn't taste nearly as good. So do yourself a favor and only buy the organic pineapple juice. But it is a ridiculously effective. If you're having sinus issues or mucus issues, it's ridiculously effective. Okay, and it tastes yummy. Okay, so the idea of money changing us, okay, the idea of money changing, well, of course, the whole reason you want money is to change something in your life, right? Because it's going to bring some type of opportunity. So you could also have an affirmation in about, you know, having money doesn't change my values. It only changes my opportunities and my experiences. Okay? Because having money doesn't change my values. It only changes my experiences and my opportunities. Okay, so that one will pull in the energy that we want to see, okay? Because we want to see change, you know, we want to see change, of course, but we want it to be change in a way that is positive and it brings in what we want. So I think we've done a pretty good job with that about money changes people. Okay. And we've addressed the, let's see, the Christians, they're not godly, going to hell, Christians are poor. Okay, so let's hit the we have nothing. If we have nothing, then nobody can take anything from us. This one is a relatively straightforward one. I am always safe. And my money, my property, and my belongings are always safe. I am always safe, and my money, my property, and my belongings are always safe. Okay? Excellent. Okay, let me see here. Okay, so Kay wrote, I am not valuable enough to have... Okay, we're definitely going to hit that one. Okay, these are great, guys. Okay. All right, so the, you know, I am safe, my and everything else is safe, hits that one. Okay, so let's talk about value. Kay, I think you hit something good there, value. So Kay wrote, I am not valuable enough to have money and the things I want. Okay, I'm not valuable enough. You know, value, it's actually a really good word. I'm going to just really quickly look up what the actual definition of value is. Okay, the actual definition of value is the regard that something is held to deserve, the importance of worth, or the usefulness of something, okay, or a person's principles or standards of behavior, one's judgment of what is important in life. Okay, this one, actually, we will write a corrective statement for it, but I want to point something else out first, and you guys give me some feedback here. But would you agree that every single life on this planet matters? Every human, from the CEO of the, you know, the pharmaceutical company to the homeless man on the corner asking for change. Would you agree that every single life matters? Yes, of course we would, right? Okay. Would you agree, someone that, hold on, let me start over. Would you agree that the seed of God, okay, that exists within Joel Osteen, Joyce Meyer, Bernie Sanders, Pope Francis, okay, those big ones for me. But would you believe that that same seed of God that exists within them exists within you? What?
Internal Trump.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we'll go there. Emily's over here challenging my belief.
No, I believe it.
Oh, I can go there. Oh, I can go there. Yes, of course we would, right? We would agree that every single person has value. So if we can see the value in every other person, then that is the foundation from which we can start to see the value of ourselves. Okay? That is the foundation by which we can start to see the value of ourselves. You see, that same seed of God is within you too. And so if you have to start there, start with, okay, the seed of God, you know, that's in me, that has value, right? And that does have value. Start there. I don't want you to associate your value with what you're willing to sacrifice or what you're willing to give to others, okay? We might be able to short-term, you know, increase our self-worth feelings a little bit, but long-term, that's not the winning game. Okay? That's not the winning game. And so, by the way, the that belief again about, you know, well, I'm not important enough or I don't have enough value, that comes from the construct as well. Because, again, it's saying, no, wait, we're too important up here, so we need all the money. And you guys down there don't. You know, you guys don't there don't. And so if, you know, you need it in a Christian context, go back to Scripture, okay? Go back to Scripture and see the value. If you need it from a spiritual context, remember that divine force of life that flows through you, that keeps you alive, that sustains you, that is inseparable from you and your light, it is divine. It is absolutely divine. You know, I can remember the first time I ever heard what namaste actually meant. And it was on a Wayne Dyer CD. I feel so old. CD, yeah, it was a CD back then. And he said, namaste means the God within me salutes or honors the God within you. And then, you know, there's other variations of it. The light within me honors the light within you. God within me honors God within you. One soul saluting another. There are so many ways that we can look at namaste, okay? But it is the seed of God within me honors the seed of God within you. That is what it means. And so if that's where you have to start there, okay? Give yourself permission. You see, you've been programmed to believe that you don't have enough value, you know, but that's simply not true. You know, it is a lie that you have been told that is easy to believe, but that does not mean it's true. And so for that one, you would say, I honor not only the value of every other person on this planet, but my own value as well. Now, here's where we have to get a little introspective when it comes to looking at value. Because a lot of times we might have some karma or some past life stuff where we were the ones judging the value of others, okay? And we have to be mindful of this. And if that's where our hang up comes from, then it's an easy fix. It's simply looking at that situation and saying, now I see this differently. I'm choosing to honor the value of every single soul. I'm choosing to see them all. In fact, when I see someone speaking really disparaging remarks to someone that they believe is beneath them, in the back of my mind, I'm going, oh, that's going to hurt in your next lifetime. Or that's going to hurt later in this lifetime. You know, that one's going to sting, because it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. In fact, let me be as vague as I can, because I don't want to out anyone that has been anywhere with me for the last couple of weeks, because this is not a gossip thing. It's a learning lesson, so I'm going to be very vague. But I was with a large group of people, and we were traveling, okay? And there was exposure to a culture that was not ours, not your typical social construction white persons, okay? Meaning that it was decorated in their culture. They were, you know, speaking their language. The music was reflective of their culture. And I walk in and I'm like, awesome, check this out. We're totally, it's like, you know, going to another part of the world. We're submerged in someone else's culture. And I'm like, let's stay. And, you know, the group I was with were like, get out of here now. You know, this is not good. This is not good. This is not comfortable. And yes, they did. They part of the group did feel like they were better than the place where we were, and that they were respectable white people who did not want to be seen there. And it really did make me very sad, and it really did break my heart. And I wanted to stay, and I did stay. I stayed longer than anyone else because I just loved it. I think that we come to this world to have all these wonderful experiences, so why not honor each and every single one of them? I know, so yeah, there you go. That was pretty vague, I know, but it captured the heart of it. And so I know that any time, and you get that's fear-based too with this group, you know, it's fear-based. It's, oh dear, if I'm happy here, someone could judge me for that. You know, if I sit here in this space and in this culture and someone that I know from my life sees me here, they're going to judge me. They're going to think I've lost my mind. They're going to think I'm less than what they think I am, right? And so, you know, it comes down to if we can really start to see the value in anyone and everyone, then we can, you know, see the value in ourselves. And I'll tell you, I talked about them in another week. You know, I had really hard lessons with that because I was raised by Republican parents who, you know, every time I got my paycheck from working in a grocery store and I had to pay taxes, you know, my parents would tell me that I was busy supporting all the welfare moms. Me at 16, I was supporting the welfare moms and how ungrateful they were that they just kept having babies, you know. And so, you know, being the 16-year-old know-it-all that I was, I got a little self-righteous, you know, that I was working to support their babies. And you know, what an awful thing that was. I didn't know any better. But boy, I had some big lessons in poverty and in humility to make up for that. And I'm glad I did, because I don't care how much money you have, I see God in you. That is absolutely true. And I will tell you, it kind of makes my husband crazy. But I see God in everybody, even Donald Trump. And that's what Emily mouthed earlier, you know, even Donald Trump. And we won't spend much time here because we can get lost easily. But I do think he's a teacher, and I'm grateful for him because he is showing us some things that need to heal. And if we can just look at him from that perspective, we won't get triggered. You know, and so I'm still struggling a little bit with Ted Cruz. So, but Donald Trump, I've got him neutralized. We're good there. Okay. So, and yes, they do. They do. They, and even all of them, whether they're our candidate or the other side's candidate, they all have that seed of God within them. They all have the capacity for greatness. They all have the capacity for ascension and consciousness-based living. And so the question is, are we listening to it? Are we aligning with it? And how far have we been programmed away from it? Okay, so start seeing the value other people and really focusing on it, and then reflect that back, okay? Also, you know, there's a little bit of a catch-22 with doing this, so I'm going to say this with some caution, okay? There is great value in being of service to others, and we can easily identify as someone of value when we're giving to others, you know, when we do something kind and loving for other people. The problem with that is that if that's where we only find our value, then our only value is in being a martyr and sacrificing ourselves for someone else. So that's tricky. If you're someone who can go to that extreme very easily, you know, be careful there. But if you're someone that you're just trying to establish that bond of connection, that bond of connectedness with humanity, then you can do that to see value, okay? You can see that to have value. And again, part of that, the affirmation to correct this is, I have great value, and I deserve to have a life filled with the things I want. I have great value. I am great value. And I deserve to have a life filled with the things that I desire or that I want. Okay. So let's look at a couple of others. So from Courtney, she wrote, I have to prove I'm worthy of receiving money. For every dollar I'm paid, I work to give $2 of service. That's martyr syndrome. That's the incarnate angel. Okay? And so we have to be guiding her back to a place of balance because, you know, well, let's face it, she's out of balance, that incarnate angel. And so she has to be able, the foundational where to start with this one is that since incarnate angels love to give, and it is why they're here, you have to be able to receive in order to be a better giver, okay? I am open to receiving great amounts of wealth so that I can do more good in this world. That's the Huna prayer for prosperity, by the way. That's the entire energy behind the Huna prayer is, I'm willing to accept great wealth so that I can go do what I need to do and help others. And so, yes, that's what we want to do. We want to focus on, I allow myself to receive, you know, large, lavish amounts of wealth, so that I may be of service and give to others. Okay? And then in regards to proving that you're worthy of money, okay, what I would do with that one is I would say, you know, God exists in every cell of my body, and that is all the proof that will ever be needed that I deserve. That I deserve good, I deserve love, I deserve health, I deserve prosperity, I deserve abundance, I deserve joy, I deserve laughter. See, the word deserve is part of the problem, okay? Because we have taken the word deserve and we've given it a different meaning, okay? In high school, you might remember you learned the word connotative and denotative. Connotative is the emotional meaning we give to a word, okay? Denotative is a dictionary meaning. So remember the D's, denotative and dictionary, both together. Connotative is the emotional or the slang, the community, the area, whatever. The connotative definition to a word. So if I look over at Emily and I say, wow, that is just such a bad necklace. Where'd you get it, right? Now, do I mean bad as in denotative or connotative? Of course I mean bad as in connotative, because clearly it's not a bad necklace. I'm using the word in a different way. We hear the word sick, too. People use it. Man, what a sick ride you've got, right? We're not meaning denotative. The car doesn't have the flu, right? Okay, so deserve is one of those words that's hit that same place, that we've taken the word deserve and we've changed it based on this construct that we are in. And so to deserve, according to the definition, is to do something or have or show qualities of worthiness. Okay? If you are a human on this planet, you deserve to be here because you are here. You see, it's inherent. All right? Now, what we've done to the word, and I don't even know that I like this, this definition, this dictionary definition of the word deserve, but it's, we'll go with it. Oh, here's a better one. Deserve means to have a claim to. I like that one. That is the dictionary definition, to have a claim to. If you incarnated on this planet, you automatically have a claim to be here. It's inherent. Okay? It is inherent. It's just like the right to breathe. No one had to give you permission to breathe. It's inherent. You have the right to breathe. No one can take that from you. At least not yet. At least not yet. So no one can take that from you. Now, we have changed the word deserve, and we have made it into this social justice decision on whether or not you deserve something. Well, she got the job. She didn't deserve that job, you know. Or I wonder who she had to sleep with to get that job, because we know she didn't deserve it, okay? We have this idea that we get to decide whether or not someone else is deserving. And because of that, we affect everyone's ability to claim what is theirs. The air you breathe is inherently yours. You incarnated on earth. You deserve to be here. Same thing with water. Same thing with land, the land you stand on, the land you live on, the land you serve on. It is yours. Okay? You have a right to claim it. Health and well-being. You know, the part that gets me is with climate change. And, you know, we all have a claim to the environment. We all have a claim to the air, to the water, to the land, to the atmosphere. We all have that claim. So it's collectively ours, right? And so we have to decide what we're going to do, you know, to help it, to do. So the word deserve, if you're here and you're going to desire something, then you automatically have a claim to it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in your consciousness to begin with. It just would not be there. Okay, and so to deserve it, you know, that's the true meaning of it. Now, again, we have it in the one that makes, I saw this, I shared it on Facebook, and my Christian friends did not like it, but it was a tweet from somebody that said, yeah, I love the part in the Bible where Jesus drug tested the multitudes to determine whether or not they deserve to eat. Now, that is the more common connotative definition of the word deserve, and that is we've set up all of these requirements meaning the construct. And if you meet them all, then you deserve to eat. But if you don't, then you don't. You know, you don't deserve to eat. You don't deserve access to health care or food or medicine. I mean, it's crazy how we have destroyed the word deserve, and we've made it into something where it has to be bestowed upon you. See, deserve says you automatically have a claim to, and it's an inherent claim. You deserve to be here because you are here. And they tried to make deserve something different that says that it must be bestowed upon you. You know, that, well, you must be bestowed. We must give you permission, you know, to live, to eat, to have access to health care. So we need to work a little bit on that word deserve, okay? But I deserve only the best in life. And, you know, if you say that a lot, I deserve only the best in life, very slowly you will start to believe it. You absolutely will. You know, you'll start to see the differences in how you feel going through that.
You're also saying, like, that you're worthy, because another thing is, like, deserving means that you're worthy of something. Okay?
Emily says deserving means you're worthy of something. It's an inherent worthiness.
Yeah.
What we're talking about. It's an inherent worthiness. It cannot come from anyone else. It cannot. And so I watched this video, and it's from, they have a Facebook page called The Storm is Coming, and I know they do a lot of supporting of Bernie Sanders. And in this video, that was all about labels, you know, and it's like, well, who would you be if no one told you who you were? And I think about that all the time. For some reason, that quote just has the most profound meaning for me. Who would you be if no one told you who you were? So think about all the labels you're born into. You're born into, well, there's a Protestant work ethic. There's a Catholic work ethic. There's Protestant guilt. There's Catholic guilt. There's all these beliefs that are on autopilot in our lives. You know, and one of them is if you're a woman, you're going to earn less than a man, and you're going to have to work harder to prove yourself. That's a common one. You know, we hear that one all the time. And then also, you know, you're going to have to prove that you're smart enough to be there, especially for a woman, because a lot of, in our past, a lot of jobs weren't open to women. And so, again, these are labels put on us. Labels. Okay. So, and Courtney, the last thing she wrote, 'tis better to give than receive. You know, it's, in some ways, I want to say, yes, that's absolutely true, because I get so much joy from giving. But if it's an out-of-balance thing, it's not, okay? If your giving and receiving is imbalanced, then yes, I think that the joy of giving can be far more than the joy of receiving. But that's only if it's imbalanced. If it's not imbalanced, it just doesn't work that way. And so remember to focus. That's why we did the 30 days of, yes, you know, the 30 days of receptivity. 30 days of receptivity, which, by the way, you're sending me your stories in on how much your life has shifted from that simple thing. I'm hearing them and I'm loving them. I'm absolutely loving them. Okay, so let me go down here. Okay, so Kathy writes from her aunt, she hears all the time, your family is too common to have money. Oh, what a great one, right? Your family is too common to have money. Oh, that's triggering even for me. Years and years ago, when I graduated high school, you know, it was a 4.0, pretty smart cookie, great ACT score, and all I really wanted to do was go to Harvard. So I went through my first two interviews for Harvard, and I passed with flying colors. And on the third interview, it was this oil man up in Oklahoma City. His office was over by the Myriad Garden. And he said, look, you're smart enough, but you're not getting in. And he said, you know, it's not fair. He said, if you were a minority or you had parents who were in politics, you'd be guaranteed admission. But he said, you know, there's no shortage of white girls from the Midwest at Harvard. And he said, you know, here's the deal. You're really smart, and I will pay all of your application fees to anywhere else you want to go. He said, you want to apply to 30 more schools? That's fine with me. I'll pay them all. And he offered to do it. He was really honest with me, but he told me straight up, you know, that my family was too common, that I could not go to Harvard because my family was too common. I wasn't a minority. and I didn't have a parents as senators. And I've always been really grateful to him for telling me the truth, because when I got rejected, it didn't hurt as bad. It didn't hurt as badly as it could have. So my family being too common is one that I think affects a lot of us. I think that one affects a lot of us. But here's the flip side to that. Okay, so we've all had so many lifetimes, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. I guarantee you at some point in one of these lifetimes, you have either been in power or in money, or you've been connected to someone who has. And that was your experience for that lifetime. Clearly not everybody is a former king or a former queen or a former prince. That would not be accurate at all. But if we look through enough lifetimes, we're going to find a lifetime where you were in a leadership capacity or connected to the leader or the most wealthy person. Because all of us have that in our learning karma. Part of the reason why we can trust ourselves with power is that we have been witness to what happens when we see abuse of that power. And because of that, we can trust ourselves with power, okay? And so, you know, maybe your family in this lifetime is common, but that doesn't mean you are common. And that doesn't mean that every incarnation, you know, has been common. I'll be honest. I mean, I get genealogy. I do. I get this idea to know where you come from. But that's such a small thing compared to your soul, because you're looking at people that you incarnated into their line for a reason. So you already know that in your soul. You already know. In fact, you probably observed the people you're trying to find on the census before you came down to earth. And so looking back at, you know, the genealogy and the history and who was the great, great, great grandmother and who was her sister, it's interesting. I get it, but it doesn't give you the picture that you think it does. Because you didn't really come from them. You chose to incarnate in that line, but you've also chosen to incarnate in, let's say, on an average person, you know, 50,000 other lines as well, other family lines. So there's no real answers in that. There's answers in your Akashic records. There's answers in your soul records as far as, you know, your lifetimes, what you're here to learn, what you've experienced. And there is no such thing, really, as a common soul. Every soul is divine. Every soul has God in it. Every soul is an expression of divinity. And so, you know, there's no such thing as too common in that regard. Okay? No such thing as too common in that regard. Okay, so let's look down. Are there any more that you want me to look at? So for that one, for that one in regards to your family is too common to have money, you know, I would say something along the lines of divinity. Divinity is expressed within every cell of my body. I am a divine spirit being, and there is no one else like me. And I deserve, and then fill in the blank. There is so much greatness there. There is so much greatness there. And remember that right before, you know, the big breakthrough for everybody, we all come from common people. You know, all of us do. We're all divine. We all have, you know, God's expression within each of us. Okay, let me see here. Are there any others in this thread that I missed that I need to look at?
I don't think so.
You think we got them all? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Courtney just said her value is in helping other people. That's that incarnate angel thing. Your value is inherent, okay? The same value that you see in other people, it's inherent within you. So that's what you need to do. I see God expressed within myself. I know my value. I know my path, I know my purpose, and that will help reset some of that. Okay, so here's what we do with the brain dump. Okay, so we identify our core statements. And these are the ones that we really want to look at, okay? Now, we've kind of gone over them. So the societal programming, these are the constructs. This is, you know, that you'll never, you know, you'll only ever manage to eke by. That, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. These are those social ones that we get from religion. These are the ones that we get from the powerful, you know, the powerful people, the powerful families. So the family programming are the beliefs that you get from your family. The personal programming are the ones relating to your value, to your self, your sense of self-worth. And then the step four for this week is writing new programming, which is what we've been doing pretty much the whole time. Okay? All right, so take your core statements, and we're going to reprogram them. So what the best thing to do is going to be, you want these core statements easily accessible at all times, okay? You don't want to, you know, have them in a notebook that is, you know, at home when you're at work or vice versa. So get a 3x5 index card that you can always carry around and have it on you with your core statements on it, okay? Save them as a note in your phone. Save them as your screensaver, you know, that way every time when you're logging on your phone, you see them. But anytime you start to feel one of these programming statements come in, you immediately go to the new programming, okay? And Emily's been writing the programming in this thread. So if I start feeling like I don't deserve the things that I want, or I don't have enough value to have the things that I want, I'm going to immediately go to, I have great value. I am great value, and I deserve to have all the things that I want in life. And I'm going to tell my consciousness, my thoughts, my energy, wait a minute, we're reprogramming now. Okay, we're reprogramming. Just like in a DOS computer, you know, when the computer would do something it wasn't expected, you would end the program and look at it, take out the coding that wasn't working, put in the new coding that you want, and then rerun the program. That's essentially what we're going to do. You're going to reprogram yourself. So in the morning, you're going to tell your consciousness, treat this like you would. You're training someone or you're teaching them. Okay, consciousness, remember, these are now our core beliefs. Okay, I have great value. I am great value. I deserve to have all the things that I want in life. I am always safe. My money and property and belongings are always safe. My core beliefs of who I am remain solid regardless of the amount of money that I have. Money has changed my life in only positive ways. Having money doesn't change my values. It changes my opportunities and my experiences. Okay? Money is a tool I use to exchange for things in my life. Money is just an exchange of energy. Read them in the morning to tell yourself this is the new programming. Then anytime you feel your programming malfunction, pull out your core beliefs and reread them to yourself. Okay? Now, I know what you're thinking, oh my gosh, every time? Yes, every time. I'm being serious. So what if I'm at work and I can't? The second you can, get them out. Okay, you will have them memorized before too long so that you can internally correct the statement. But until you have them memorized, you need to have them accessible on your phone, on an index card, write them on your mirror. You know, I'm someone that I learn by writing, so I'd be writing mine several times by hand. That way I can incorporate the energy that way. Every time you feel your programming go off, reintroduce the new programming. That's what this is. It is new programming, okay? New programming. And I will post some of the social ones, the societal ones that we want. And these will be things like, life is easy and everything always goes my way. Everyone in my life conspires to my success. I am a magnet for prosperity, success, and good fortune. Okay? So these are ones that are going to replace some of those out there, like, you know, life is hard, the only thing certain in life are death and taxes. The societal programming, you know, are those ones that aren't necessarily within you, they're forced on you and they affect your programming. So we'll give you some societal reprogramming as well that starts to create an external sense of well-being, okay? Your programming is the internal, and the societal programming is the external sense of well-being. Okay, so I will post those in the group this week. And so we'll get those in there as well. Get your programming, get it on your phone, get it on your index card. I mean, write it on your arm if you want to. That might be a great way to always have it available. But you have to have this programming around you. It has to be accessible so that you can start to correct it. Okay? So that you can start to correct it whenever you feel yourself, you know, veering off and going off. Okay. Also, if you need to include the scriptures in there that you like. So next week, and well, not even just next week, but in the Facebook discussion group for the class, I would like for you to share some of your new programming. You might inspire someone else's with your wording. You might inspire someone else's with the way that you have it done. So I want you to share your programming in there, and we will all share ours as well. And then the other thing is we have the release coming up. So the full moon is going to be a week from tomorrow. I think that's the 21st. I don't have a calendar in front of me. Let me pull up my calendar real quick and look and see. Okay, so 22nd. So Monday the 22nd is the full moon. So because the full moon hits in between the 21st and the 22nd, we're actually going to do the release on Sunday the 21st, okay? So Sunday the 21st is going to be our group release. So if you're local and you want to come to my house, and I'll be giving that address out privately, we will do the release in my backyard with a fire pit. And there'll be details about that going out to the members of the class. And we will do our releases together, sharing space for each other. If you are not here local and you cannot come to that in person, that does not mean you cannot participate. We can have an open Skype session so that you can be with the group via distance. You can be doing your release at your home, and we will be holding space for you as well. We'll find a way to help you be included. Okay, we'll find a way to help you be included so that you're part of us in that regard. Okay, so we do have the big release coming up. We have the new programming going into place, and I feel like we did good. I feel like we killed it. You know, there's another connotative definition for a word. We didn't. Well, maybe we did kill some false programming, but it's being used to say we did good. Okay, so get your new programming written. Get it on the card. Get it on your phone. Start your new reprogramming. Share them, and we'll have our big release next Sunday. Okay? All right, anything else, guys? Let me check the chat room and check the board one more time. Okay, everything looks good. So I tell you what, have a great night's sleep. And if you're off tomorrow for President's Day, certainly enjoy it. Take some time to work on your programming there. And I will meet you. So look for updates and details in the class discussion forum as far as next week. What we might do is just do a podcast that night. And then just have the live group here, and then just do a podcast so that we're not live on the radio, but we can be live during the release. Okay. All right, guys. Thanks. Have a great night. Talk soon. Namaste.